You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast. It's time for our recap of Apple's September 2017 event. iPhones, Apple TVs, Apple Watches, and so much more. Recorded on September 12th, just after the event ended. This week, Brian, Brad, and Jim are joined by special guest Jason Young. Episode 51 of the Infinite Loopback Podcast begins now. It's a most wonderful time of the year, and it's not even Christmas. It's Apple Nerd Day. So episode 51 of Infinite Loopback. We're joined today by an extra guest host, Mr. Jason Young. Hi, Jason.
Hey, guys.
And that's enough for the pleasantries. We have a lot of ground to cover, a lot of things to talk about, probably not a long time to do it, so let's get cracking. So, of course, this is the time of year that we all look forward to. There's two times of year, WWDC and this day, the big September announcement that comes every year in, well, September. Kicking things off, you had Angela Ahrendts, the former CEO of Burberry, who I don't think has ever made an appearance on stage in any previous announcement. Is that right, guys? Do you remember ever popping up there? Maybe once?
I don't think I've ever seen her before.
I concur.
So they're overhauling the retail experience, and they're going to make it a place where you can, like, you know, learn to use Apple products, hang out, and just sort of chill. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's like come buy our stuff, and every Apple store is so freaking crazy busy nowadays that I don't really know what they can do. And I mean, they can't make them bigger in the shopping malls because I mean they're already pretty big. I can see them doing this where they're building different type stores from here on out, but the existing ones are already, what's the stat? They're like the most dollars per square foot of any retail store in the U.S. or something crazy like that, and all Apple stores are. So, I mean, I don't know. I think Apple stores are really nice. There's a lot you can go in there and play with. The people are always friendly. You know, they hooked me up with my MacBook, so that was cool. I don't know. You know, I thought they spent a little too much time talking about it personally.
I think it's cool that they're going to have that new learning facility like Apple Today or whatever they were going to call it. And I guess only Apple is big enough to be able to get big names like, you know, the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan in there to teach you how to, you know, program beats on your Apple, be it, I guess, Pro Tools or GarageBand or whatever. I mean, I thought that was pretty awesome. On top of, you know, they already have a pretty cool learning experience. You know, I realize if you go into what they were calling an Apple Classic store or something today, you go in there and you see three grandmas in there learning how to attach photos to an email so they can, you know, send photos to their kids or other friends of their grandkids or something. But I think it's pretty neat little space. The shared meeting spaces, I did think, was a nifty idea.
I'll say this, the Apple store closest to me has recently opened up as one of the town square like stores. So it moved essentially one exit north up the highway out of a mall into the destination living kind of town hall condo, you know, live where you eat kind of places. And the experience there was pretty interesting in that I went in to get my iPad Pro 10.5, and the place had probably twice as many people as the mall location, but it felt not nearly as claustrophobic at all. I mean, like, there was plenty of room to walk around. A lot of times in the past when I would go to an Apple store in the mall, right, I was on a mission, right? I wanted to get in, get out, check out as fast as I could and not really engage anybody. And here, you know, it was definitely a more comfortable shopping experience in the newer style facility.
Yeah, I want to echo that, because Jason's closest store is also the store that I go to, and it's definitely one of those mixed-use living sort of living shopping type of areas. It's right next to a Tesla store and a Brooks Brothers store, if that gives you any idea of the neighborhood that you're in with this thing. It's very, very upscale. It's very nice.
I think they refer to them as lifestyle centers.
There you go. But before I get into my viewpoint on that, I did want to say that, you know, The Verge, of course, had to take a big hot steaming pile all over today's announcement, and particularly this part in particular. They call the Steve Jobs Theater a mausoleum, and they refer to the town squares as a pretentious farce, which is kind of stupid. And here's why I think it's kind of stupid. To everybody that's probably listening to this is aware of this already, but in addition to being, you know, more profitable per square foot than Tiffany's, I think, which is the next closest retailer, which is, of course, a jewelry store. Those stores are constantly packed. I mean, constantly, from the time that they open till the time that they close. I've gone before on like a random weekday, you know, a couple of years ago, and I'd be there like a Friday morning at 10 a.m. to exchange something or drop something off. And there would be people, and it doesn't matter if it's new iPhone day or just a random Thursday in the middle of, you know, August or whatever, it was packed. There was a line always formed out the door. That wasn't the case for any other store in the mall, but there was always a line waiting to get into the place. It was like, you know, they had the little blue-shirted bouncer out there taking your information to see what you're there for. So these are already packed places. They are already overflowing with people. And one of the things I always think of when I go in there is, what are these folks doing? Like, when I go in, it's for a very specific purpose. I'm buying something. I'm getting some help. I'm leaving. But I just see people milling about, trying things, hanging out, and you're practically tripping over these folks, right? It's like it's going to a bar on a crowded Saturday night. You're like inching past people. It was never really pleasant. So they already have all this foot traffic that's coming in there, and they're not there for a purpose. They're hanging out. They're doing stuff. It's already happening today. For them to say, oh, this is a pretentious farce, just makes me think, well, these folks have never actually spent any time in one of these places because they would see this. I don't go to Best Buy and see people milling about like I do in an Apple store. I don't go to any sort of retailer and see people hanging out, just either playing with the products and doing stuff like you would see in an Apple store. So this is really not a ridiculous idea. They've got all these people there anyway. Why not make the most of it? I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer to do something like this. I will say it probably doesn't seem hugely innovative because it's like, well, we've got all these people in the store. What can we do with them? Making them more comfortable and making them more likely to use the products is probably not a bad idea, but it just doesn't seem ridiculous. It seems like an obvious sort of thing they should be doing, in my opinion.
I've actually seen people go into Apple stores in the past and almost use it like as a public library type of workstation, right? Go in there and you'll see them log into Facebook and Twitter and send messages and just do their normal computing type stuff. And then right before they leave, half the time, they don't even log out, right? So you can come in and hijack somebody's
have a lot of fun.
Facebook session. Exactly.
Well, going back to the original mission of the Apple stores too, you remember we all are old enough to remember when Apple products were in stores. They were usually, if you went to an electronics store to buy Apple stuff, if you were lucky, it was relegated to some small section of a store. You had employees that were usually PC people that didn't know much about it. It really wasn't, you couldn't find anybody that really knew anything about it. If you want to buy something like that today or find real good opinions about things, would you rather go to, I hate to pick on Best Buy, but would you rather go to Best Buy or would you rather go to the Apple store? Would you rather go to where that's all they know or it's just a subset of things, something they might know?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been, I don't want to say that long, but it hasn't been that long that Best Buy didn't have Apple stuff. I mean, they didn't have Macs. They didn't have, you know, they might have gotten iPods or you know, iPhones because they had cellular providers in the stores. But I mean, I'd say you go back 3-4 years ago before Best Buy's actually started having Mac gear in them, because I remember having to go to like CompUSA in Jackson to see Mac gear, you know, years ago.
I think of the Micro Center next to me, and it was always at the very back of the store. It was always off in a corner, and it was always cordoned off, and it was just sort of like an afterthought. And you get these people that are working on commission, and I'm sure they'd be happy to sell you something, but most of those guys there are PC gamers. They either spoke in derogative terms about Apple's products or just simply didn't know anything about it because they didn't use them. So if you want to get an informed opinion about it, it makes sense to go there. They used to have this program at the Apple stores. I don't know if you guys know about this. I tried to get my mother-in-law to do it, but I don't think she ever made it to the Apple store, but they had the one-to-one program where you could pay $100 a year, and you got like these unlimited classes where you could go in there for like an hour to pop, and you could ask them questions, pick their brains, do stuff like that. I think that was a wonderful program. I hated that they ended it, but I see why now, because they're replacing it with things like this. When you'd go to the Apple store in San Francisco, they had a theater upstairs when you go to the upper level, and you'd see people watching movies on how to do things on iMovie or how to do things in other pieces of software. Now, of course, they didn't have that in the stores where I was, but still, I mean, I think this is a good idea. I think it's not ridiculous at the face of it. And if you spend any time around it, you'll see you already have the foot traffic. Why not put it to use instead of just having them all milling around and maybe not buying anything?
I took advantage of that program when it was available, back when it was $99. And I mean, this is circa 2008, 2009 time frame, right? Where I'd been a hardcore PC guy for a long time. The iPod Touch and iPhone had kind of just come out the year before. And, you know, it was actually what got me my first Mac was the announcement of there being an app store, right? I was interested in learning how to write iPhone and iOS apps. But the great thing is, I mean, you could schedule those classes, you know, 2 or 3 days in advance, and they would teach you any application essentially that was an Apple app. So, you know, I was doing their Final Cut Pro and Aperture and those types of things. You know, for the money, I absolutely got my money's worth and was kind of bummed when they canceled the program a year or so later.
Yeah, I think it's only a good thing. I'm very psyched about this. I really wish there were more Apple stores for like some of my less tech savvy friends. friends and family could take advantage of it, because it's, I've never had a bad experience there yet. I've always had good tech support whenever I've had to go in. So anywho, moving along, Apple Watch. So the number one watch in the world overtook Rolex, man, and it only took 2.5 years. I guess I shouldn't be too surprised. We've talked about this in episodes past about the popularity, but I really wish they would release the numbers. But at the, I guess if you can find out how many watches that Rolex sells, we could sort of kind of reverse engineer, get the ballpark of how many Apple watches they've sold.
I've always thought it odd that they didn't release the numbers, because they released the numbers for the other devices. So why not the watch? I guess they figure it can only hurt, maybe. Like it's not as big a number as you think it is, but it's still a pretty big number. And so they probably are just better off not saying anything and letting people guesstimate on the number. I obviously see more Apple watches than I see, you know, anything nowadays as far as people wearing a watch. When I see somebody wearing a watch and it's not an Apple Watch, I'm actually kind of surprised.
I don't see people wearing Android Wear. It's either Apple Watch or a real watch almost always. So the new watch is the Series 3. And one of the things that surprised me when they were announcing the lineup is that they've killed the Series 2 and the Series 1 hangs around. So the Series 1 and then the Series 3 are all you have.
Sort of like with the iPad Air. You know, you had two generations ahead of the iPad, but they still kept the iPad Air around.
Well, I thought what they did with the iPad and the iPhones in years past was that the previous year's model became the entry point, and then the oldest one would, they may keep it around, they may not, but you could always count on buying what was current last year as the older model. It seems weird, and I know that, you know, Series 1 technically came out last year too, but that was really a revamped Series 0 from the year before. So it seems weird to me, but I got to thinking about it, and I think the reason they're doing that is that if you want the one with GPS or nicer features, they want you to buy the Series 3, and if you can live without the GPS or the frills, I guess the Series 1 is the reason they kept it around. It's the only thing I can figure. What do you guys think?
I think it has to do with the waterproofing. I think it probably cost them more to build the waterproof watch than it does the original, which was just water resistant. I think that probably has a lot to do with it. They want people, like you said, I mean, to pay for that feature. I think that's a really good feature to have. So I'm kind of sad that I've had my watch for 4 months now and it's been relegated. So boo, but I'm not getting a new one. So
that's why you buy on launch day.
Well, for me, the thing that I like about the fact that they're keeping the Series 1 around is it keeps the value up of my original watch. So when I go to replace it with the Series 3, maybe I stuff a few more bucks in my pocket from Craigslist on the sale of the original one.
Indeed. We're looking at a watch that's, I guess, slightly thicker. And I guess the way they described it was the extra thickness is about the size of about 2 sheets of paper extra. It is a little weird that out of all their devices, the watch is getting thicker. But I guess in that constrained space, that's all you can do.
Mind you, he said the case is the same size, but the sensors stick out 2 sheets of paper more. So
that's a fair point. Fair point. So it's a little bit further away from your, I mean, yeah, a little bit further away from your skin, but it's still the same case size, I guess. At least I guess we should be grateful they didn't break the band compatibility, because that would, with somebody who has as many bands as I do, I'd be rage punching a hole in the wall right now with that Steel Link band alone, just, you know, if you couldn't use it. But I'm glad they kept it, so that's at least nice.
Yeah, I'm not quite the band collector that you are, but I've already got about four that I swap in and around a good bit, maybe five now, actually, with a couple of new ones I just got, so.
Yeah, and speaking of bands, of course, they announced several new bands today, and most of those were just, well, there were several bands, I guess. The sport bands were the new ones, which are basically a Milanese loop, but in a nylon configuration, which I thought was unusual looking. And I hate that they call it a sport band, because I can't imagine...
They call it a sport loop.
Well, okay, yeah, it's a sport loop. I can't imagine working out, getting all sweaty, and having that on fabric. I think the elastomer design of the sport bands are really the way to go. The Nike band is my new favorite. It's the one that I probably wear more often than not, just because it's easy to go ahead when I'm going to go work out to leave it on and then just be able to go with it and not swap it. But I did go ahead and buy one of the black nylon sport loop, and that should be here Friday.
To contrast with your working out argument about not wearing the nylon band, I actually have a lot of Maritak nylon bands for different watches I have, and you know this already, and they're the long one-piece Zulu style band. Anyway, I throw them in the washing machine. My wife has one of those little bags that you wash lingerie in. You know, you could also use it to like wash your shoelaces, you know, if you get mud on your shoelaces, and it keeps them from getting all tangled up and tied up with the other stuff in the washing machine. Well, I take my watch bands and put them in there, so there's no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that with your Apple band.
Totally fair point, and that's something I hadn't considered. I feel a lot more comfortable doing it with the sport loop than I would be with the normal nylon bands, just for fear of breaking off the metal pieces that are on there. But with the sport loop, I think I'd feel more comfortable. It is interesting the colors they put in there. Let's see, they were spicy orange, yellow neon, which is sort of a flash, I guess flash sports, what they're calling it. Electric pink, midnight blue, seashell sport loop, dark olive, and pink sand.
Well, guys, don't revoke my man card, but I'm going to have to admit that I kind of actually like the Hermes bands that they showed. They actually looked pretty good this year.
I was just about to say that. So in years past, when you had the other Hermes bands, I was like, that's okay. But the one, the black leather that is like the driving glove, I was like, oh, that is pretty tight. I would like that a lot. The other thing, and of course, we're just sort of all over the place now, but the ceramic watch now coming in a ceramic gray, I guess is what it was called. That is the thing that is the hardest thing for me to resist, because I'll probably end up getting, in all likelihood, I'll probably go for the Series 3, but I'll do the black stainless steel like I've done since the beginning. But man, that ceramic gray, I want that ceramic watch so badly. But $1,200, that's a hard one to get past the wife.
I agree, that's a sharp one. That would be really nice. I mean, all the trimmings of the stainless, but you know, weighs a lot less. I don't know, the white one, when you see it, you know what it is. Now you're paying for this one, and it may not necessarily look as obvious that you paid a whole lot more for your gray watch. And I know you're not, like, all wanting to show that off, but I'm just saying, the white one, you see the white one, and you know, hey, somebody paid $1,200 for that one. If you casually see a ceramic gray one, you might could misidentify it for just a space gray aluminum or something. Just saying.
I don't have to show it off, because I think everyone that even knows me remotely just assumes that I hoover it all up and buy all of it. So that doesn't bother me too much. But I do like the understated quality of the... I mean, I like the white ceramic too, but something about the way that those bands look with just that white watch, I just never... if I had the white band and used the white band all the time, it would be fine. But I just didn't like how some of that stuff paired with it. Everything goes with black pretty well, so that's another reason I like it. But I'm... You know, one of the things that I've noticed, depending on the band that you're wearing, is that notifications... I like wearing the Steel Link band, I do, but depending on the day, I have to either take links in or you know, take links out, and I don't notice the notifications as much. Now, when I'm wearing any other band and I can tighten it appropriately, that doesn't happen, but it seems to happen a lot with the Steel Link. I do wonder if I would still have that issue with the ceramic, but I guess I won't find out, because I just have a feeling I won't be going for that one. But man, you know, maybe when the Series 4 comes out, I'll finally take the plunge and go that route. So one of the things that really, really struck me as kind of neat was it seemed like there was an overall emphasis on going without your phone. And I know the scenario that most people talk about, and the one that they pointed to a lot, was going on a run, being able to use your AirPods to listen to your music, being able to, if you're using Find My Friends as I do, that your location automatically shifts to your watch, so that you're out and about, your Apple Music will stream to it, which, I mean, that's actually pretty cool. When I'm doing my workout, I would love to be able to leave my phone locked in my glove compartment or in the locker at the gym, and strictly just use my watch for everything. And that's kind of compelling. And then I may actually end up dropping Spotify and, you know, in the 1% Music Club, just be Apple Music from here on out. I've been trying to make the switch the last couple months, and that might actually sort of push me in that direction. So that's kind of nice. I really like that.
Maybe this with the HomePod will push you in that direction, since you'll want to do streaming on that too.
The HomePod is definitely going to make me go that route, I do believe. If I haven't done it by September, I'll probably do it by Christmas when that comes out, because I definitely... And that actually may push me back toward the regular podcast app for a while, too, depending on what the support for that is. But being able to talk to it and have it work the way that I want it to... And again, it's not like you can't do that with an Echo or those types of things today, but just being able to have the same application that I use in my car, that I use through CarPlay, using my house, using my watch, that's a pretty powerful default. So I'm kind of excited about that.
And I was just going to throw in, I mean, we don't need to go down the rabbit hole, but I do think it was interesting that we heard nothing about that today at all, not even a slight mention of the HomePod. I mean, you know, they could have threw in a little piece of it or something, but there was no mention of it at all. So maybe they, you know,
they may save it for the Mac Pro announcement that's closer to Christmas.
Yeah, there definitely has to be at least one more event when that comes out. I don't think that's just going to be a press release. I think if they're smart, they're going to want to hype that, I hope. Even though we know it's coming, you still want to, it still merits its own thing. But you're right, we don't want to go down that rabbit hole too much. So the dual core processor is supposed to be up to 70 times more performant than the existing processor. So much so now that Siri can talk on the Series 3, which is, I don't know how I feel about that. I like most of the time when I'm interacting with it, and you know, I'm actively interacting with it, so the fact that it transcribes and I see it, good enough for me, but...
That's certainly Go-Go Gadget watch territory right there.
I was thinking it might be Knight Rider-ish, but, you know, or Dick Tracy, depending on how old one is. But yeah, that's definitely kind of cool, I guess. I just want it to have sort of parity more with what the phone can do. You know, I hate when, you know, I invoke Siri and then it maybe misunderstands me and just says, continue this on your iPhone, and gives you the little microphone icon or whatever. It's like, no, we're having a conversation here. You're going to finish it. We started here. You're going to finish it here. So I'm hoping that that it's better. And again, if you use the watch for any extended period of time, you have to interact with Siri. So I know you're not a big Siri guy, Jim, but do you actually use it on your watch on any regularity?
I do for turning the lights on and off at my house mostly. That's the main thing that I use Siri on my watch for, is, you know, hey, turn on the lights or turn off the lights. I think that's about it with there. I know one of the things I don't want to say harped on in the past, but kind of Siri parity between, you know, if they're going to have it on the Mac and you're going to have it on the phone and the iPad, and now, you know, to do more on the watch, have her be able to do the same things everywhere. You know, don't give me a little taste of it here and then it can't do it there. And so, you know, it sounds like they're trying to get closer to that on the watch. So that'll be nice.
It is a big problem when you're used to doing something and you do it on, you know, you tell it to turn off your light and you're on the Mac and it's like, I can't control HomeKit. Sorry about that. Or you do it on your TV and it's, I don't know how to do that from here. It's for people like us, it's annoying, but we can deal with it. But ordinary people will see that stuff and they get turned off really easy and then never use it again. And that's a problem. So let's see what else is going on with that. So it has an eSIM. That's kind of cool. In the past, most of your carriers have, and at least in the U.S., have sort of rejected the eSIM. I think T-Mobile and AT&T have been okay with it, but if you activated a device using the built-in SIM on the iPad, it would lock to the device to AT&T forever, even though there was no reason for that to happen. So I'm glad that doesn't seem to be the case here with the watch. At least I don't think it is. Each of the providers are going to be charging $10 a month for connectivity, which is highway robbery. Previously, you know, a few weeks ago, we were talking about this topic of what we thought it was going to cost, and I did some research, and as best I could figure, all of the existing Android Wear watches that existed, it was only $5 a month to add, you know, connectivity to those things. So now T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T are all charging $10 a month for connectivity. It looks like Verizon and T-Mobile will give you 3 free months of service, so I guess that's something better than nothing. I was hoping T-Mobile was going to be cheaper than the others, because I so desperately would have had my iPad and iPhone on Verizon, and I would have put my watch on T-Mobile, just because I'm not going to be browsing the web on this thing. That's half the cost of what a device costs on my unlimited plan. And the watch doesn't do half of what an iPad or an iPhone does. So that seems remarkably unfair. Not that that matters to anyone, but
so while I agree that that's, you know, a bit of a high price, if you're comparing it to the Android Wear, right, I bet you if you ran the metrics at the end of a month that Apple Watch Series 3 users are going to use at minimum 4 times the data that an Android Watch user is going to use.
Possibly.
Don't penalize me because my thing is better, because my thing is more useful and has a better UI. And I mean, that was the thing with iPhone power users when the iPhone first came out and the providers realized, holy cow, people are using this for so much more data than they've ever used on Blackberries or anything else. We've got to figure this out because this is killing us. And I mean, I remember that from 10 years ago. I mean, that's when all this started, was they're like, oh crap, this is actually a useful internet in your hand. People are using this.
One thing that I was surprised that they didn't do a demo of was an app more like something like Strava, right? I used to do a lot of cycling, and I would tote around a Garmin. The Garmin would map it. It would give me all my data. I'd wear a, you know, terrible heart rate monitor around the chest that was awful after a ride. And, you know, having an app like a Strava type app that can utilize that GPS, the cellular, you know, map your rides or your walks, your runs. I think that's where the additional data is going to come in for those folks who are pretty active with their Apple Watches.
Actually, it's going to be Apple Music. I mean, now if I go the cellular route and if I'm paying $10 a month, you damn well better believe I'll become Jim when it comes to listening to music. And I'm not even that big of a music listener now, but I swear, even when I'm on Wi-Fi, I'll turn off the Wi-Fi and make it go over cellular just to sit there and stream it, even if I'm in the office or at home, just so.
You're going to get your $10 worth.
You better believe it. I'm getting my pound of data out of Verizon if that's going to be the case. But if nothing else, the 3 free months can let you decide if it's really worth it. But then again, if you pay the upcharge for the cellular, you would have decided that before you did it. So the stuff with the heart rate is very, very interesting to me. So again, nearly 250 days in a row of working out. I collect my data meticulously. I'm a nerd when it comes to that. I love going back and seeing how hard I'm pushing myself, how many calories I'm burning when I'm working out, and trying to establish a baseline and push it higher and higher and higher and get my heart rate up quicker and quicker and quicker. So I like the fact that the heart rate sensor is better in the Series 3. That alone will probably be my justification for going Series 3. I do like the fact that it's going to give you your resting heart rate, which it's going to take over the data that you have accumulated. I'm guessing that it'll only start when you get to Series 3. Otherwise, I have a ton of metrics going back a long way. I hope that they'll do, but I'm sort of doubtful. And showing what your recovery heart rate is going to be pretty good too, how quickly it can come down. I'm not really worried about that because I watch my heart rate when I hop off the equipment and I'm cooling down, so I see it. But again, more data is more better. I'm not going to complain.
I definitely thought all the extra metrics and screens that they were offering on the new watch was really cool. Even more of a reason for me to get one.
I swear I thought for a moment there that they were going to say that they had the glucose monitoring in it. It felt like when they were talking about how great the sensors are, how wonderful the sensors are, I'm like, here it comes, glucose monitoring, here it comes, baby, glucose, and then nothing. So that was kind of a letdown. I do like that the heart rate app is going to show that heart rate on the watch face itself. So that's a good thing. As someone who wonders sometimes when he gets irritated what his heart rate is jumping up to, you're going to be notified when your heart rate is elevated and it detects that you're not moving around. So that'll be nice to see how often that'll be my pissed off meter that I can tell how irritated I am. I do believe how quick that's
the rage-o-meter.
Going. Rage-o-meter.
Yeah, so for me, the heart rate stuff is near and dear to me. I recently had some health problems, and I've been using a Fitbit Charge 2, and it does collect the resting heart rate stuff, and you know, it let me know, well, let me rephrase, it didn't let me know. My meticulous checking it, you know, on a frequent basis let me know that I actually need to go seek out a cardiologist, and luckily, you know, we've got all that fixed, and I'm back in good health. So seeing that, you know, the improvements there, one of the things that I'm curious about is if the recovery heart rate is going to be a function of just when you tell it that you're doing activities, or is it going to be a dynamic collection where it just, if it senses your heart rate goes up, it tells you what that's going to be, or if you actually have to start like a running or swimming or walking activity, and then it gathers it in that particular mode.
Just a guess, I'm betting you're going to have to be doing an activity for it to catch it. I'll be very shocked if that's not the case, but, you know, who knows? I guess we'll know very shortly. I did like the fact that they announced that they're doing the Apple Heart Study with Stanford, and they're trying to figure out atrial fibrillation. They're going to detect when you have arrhythmia. So I can recall a few times where it seems like people had picked up on this on their own when they were having some sort of heart issues in the past where this had...
Some sort of event, right?
Yeah, where they had noticed from their Apple Watch data that something didn't look right. So it seems like they're finding where these strengths are, and they're really starting to sort of play to those strengths. So
yeah, it's like I think I was dead for 10 minutes last hour. I don't know what happened there.
How long till we get the shock paddles, the defib, and the watch, so I can just raise my arm and
seriously? So how long till you can put one of these on my 90-year-old grandma, and when like her heart stops, the watch automatically dials 911 for you? Right.
Well, you know, they had in the customer testimonials where the guy was sitting in the car and the car was hanging off a cliff or something, and I was hanging there for 6 minutes and I was able to dial 911. Which, wow. Honestly, I think that would be pants pooping time for me. I don't know that I would have the clarity of mind to invoke, say, Siri, call the local constabulary and get them out here. Help me out.
Coco Gadget Watch, save me from this cliff. You know.
Jeff, MacGyver, you sound please. Like you're about to have a heart attack. Do you need to talk about your heart rate first?
Yes, yes, Ghost of Steve Jobs, save me. Summon help. Oh, man. Oh, I did like in the customer testimonials, they had that one guy from Mississippi that had his story. That was...
Shout out, Mississippi. Woo, woo.
Shout out to Mississippi in an Apple keynote. Let's see. Do. The cellular model has that red crown. Ugh, why?
What's with that? That's what is that?
Just so you can spot it from across the room. Is like, oh, that guy bought the cellular one.
Words cannot describe how much I hate that lame red crown.
I don't get that at all. That doesn't make any sense at all. That is so un-Apple-like to, I mean, brand something like that, because they usually, you know, you get an Apple, silver or black Apple on something, and that's about it. But for them to put, is it on all three models? It's even on the gold model?
That is a great question. I did not notice. I'll have to go back to the store page and look. The fact that it's on any model, who's going to be start selling the stickers? You go to the office supply store, you get the little multicolored stickers. I want one that's black to stick on the crown if I were to get the cellular model, just so I didn't have to look at it.
It's going
to
be a Kickstarter soon to replace your crown.
I'll just use a Sharpie and just bloop, bloop, paint over it. It'll be fine. But
a paint pen, yeah.
I don't know why you would need to use that to distinguish a feature, a hardware-based feature on a device. That just seems insane to me. You don't see them do that on any other...
Okay, here's an example of where you might need that. Some cases, you're not allowed to have your phone, like courtroom or things like that. Like, you have to give up your phone, or like, let's say you're going to some convention where they're going to do a keynote and they want everybody to give their phones out because they want to keep everything private that you're finding out. And so everybody's got to turn in, you've got to turn in your phone in some places. Well, most of the times they're not going to make you turn in your watch now, right? But this, and even with this, it's not obvious enough to me. I mean, if they plan ahead, they know, hey, if it's got a red crown, it's got a phone on it, so you got to take it. But, you know, how often are they actually going to know that? I'm just saying that's one example of where you could identify the watch as a phone device over the other watches.
You could still pull that shenanigan with a normal Apple Watch, though. Assuming that the watch was in sort of Bluetooth range, you could still, unless you're locking it in some sort of Faraday cage, it's still going to be able to...
I get you. You understand what I'm saying, though. I mean, there are instances where you have to give up your phone for something, and at least this identifies the watch as a phone.
True.
But are you actually going to be able to make a phone call from the Apple Watch without the presence of an iPhone?
Yes. That was the whole cellular thing. I think the question you're really meaning is, do you still need to have a phone to pair the watch to? And I think that's probably still going to be the case, because that's how you still get operating system updates and that sort of thing, unless they've completely revamped
it. Or how they linked your number to it at all.
Yeah, they said the phone number had to be your iPhone's number, so the watch is not getting its own number.
Well, now hang on a second. I disagree with this a little bit. I mean, you look at your iPad today, right? You've got a cellular iPad. If I call your phone, it doesn't matter if it's a phone call or a FaceTime audio or whatever, it's going to ring on your iPad. It's going to ring on your Mac. My iPad has its own phone number, technically speaking. You can't call it because it's not a phone. It's a data thing, but it's still, technically speaking, has its own identifier on the network. That is a phone number. I hate it when they said that, because it's like, some of the articles that I saw that came out this afternoon likened it to, T-Mobile has a program called Digits, I guess, that does that. It puts your same phone number everywhere. It's like, big deal. I've had this with iCloud for like three releases, right? This is nothing new. So that, I just figured that's how it's working. If my iPhone is at home and my watch is on me, you know, the fact that something's hitting my number that's associated with my iCloud account is where all the magic happened, I just assumed. Maybe I'm misreading that, but I was counting on that to be the case of, I didn't think it was actually, the phone is not the part that matters there. How you get the OS updates and how you do the configuration, all the other stuff still happens through the phone. So unless they've changed it in watchOS 4 that you can do everything through the OS on the device to be able to update and everything else, which I doubt, then I think you're still going to have to pair it to a phone. You're just one step closer to not having to pair it to a phone.
No, I get you. That makes sense. I was just saying, technically, that's the way they announced it. Is that may be their way of subtly saying, look, you still have to have an iPhone. You can't just go buy an Apple Watch and this be your everything device. You know, you're going to spend $600 on this watch, and then, oh yeah, we're going to make sure you have to have a phone too, to really make it more than just a chunk of metal on your wrist.
I am curious how the skiing and snowboarding apps are going to function on the watch, how they're actually going to collect meaningful data. I'll let you guys know come about January how that works.
It'll be fall rates.
Nobody falls like I do. I'm a world-class faller. I can just tumble right over, almost like a toddler. It's great. I never hurt myself. So Apple TV. Holy cow, Apple TV. I am really, really happy, and it's only tangentially related to the Apple TV itself. So Apple TV 4K is the name of the new Apple TV device. Supports HDR10 as well, which is going to be nice. Those screensavers, which already look great in 1080p, I can't wait to see them in 4K HDR when I get a 4K HDR TV, assuming, of course. And, of course, the UI has been done and redone in 4K as well. Basically, 4K, 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 4K. I'm very happy, but not so much about that. What I'm really happy about is that Apple is automatically updating all of your purchased high-def movies to 4K. Phenomenal. I've got, I think I tallied up 297 movies in iTunes today, And out of those 297, probably at least 290 are in HD. So now immediately I'm about to have a collection of nearly 300 4K movies. So that to me is not only great news, right? I now immediately have, because, you know, in past episodes, what's my big complaint been? I don't have any content to watch. I can get on Netflix, watch a handful of titles and pay extra. Maybe Amazon Prime, if, you know, that were available. Not a lot to watch. I can't do PlayStation View. I can't do DirecTV Now in 4K, as far as I know. You know, wasn't too excited about it, but to have 300 movies at my disposal immediately without having to do anything or spend one dime, I mean, that if ever there was a reason for me to go out and buy a 4K TV, now would be it. And the 4K movies cost the same as the 1080p movies, so no, thank God for Apple negotiating that one, because they wanted to charge, I think, a new movie in HD is normally no more than $20 on iTunes, and they wanted 30, the studios did, for the 4K versions. And if that were the case, I don't know.
I would be a lot more excited about it if Brian was still able to share his 4K movies, but that you can't do that anymore, so darn.
It's definitely going to entice me to buy more movies through the iTunes ecosystem. I only own one 4K HDR DVD, and I bought it solely because I've got an Xbox One and a 65-inch Sony that's 4K HDR, and it looks fantastic, but even buying it the day that it was released, it was $10 more, and it was like $27.99 on release day, and that's just more than I like to spend, whereas I think that $19.99 is the, you know, appropriate pain point for that kind of content.
Is that your demo movie for when friends come over? You're like, hey, look at this HDR high def 4K thing on my big TV?
No, there are some better options through Amazon. Amazon has some pretty good demos in 4K that are pretty breathtaking.
That's good to know.
As friend of the show Donnie Broom said, Steve Jobs has given you permission to buy a 4K TV, and it's like, no, giving me 300 HD movies at my disposal that I didn't have before has given me permission, because now I have something to watch on it. So I'm super excited about that.
Well, even if they didn't automatically upgrade all of your content, imagine if you did have to go back through and pay $10 to, say, complete the album, like they used to have that nomenclature, or $10 every movie to upgrade. I mean, that would be a $3,000 upgrade cost for you to upgrade, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
So you'd have to buy, you know, say $1,000, $1,200 TV, and then spend another $3,000 to upgrade all your existing content.
Yeah, that would be insane. And they could have just said, we're only doing Planet of the Apps or whatever lame thing in 4K, and that would have been like, ugh. But at least this way, this is the right move. This is the way to get somebody excited about what you have to sell. Because just like Jason, I have three Apple TV fourth generations now that I have to unload somewhere. Actually, I have four. If remember, I did put one in my guest room that I got from one of those free streaming services type of dealies that I now have to, I don't know. My guest rooms can stay in 1080p. They'll be fine.
They're going to move a lot of TV 4Ks now because of that whole negotiation.
They are. Yeah, that they're going to move a lot of TVs, because I was totally, like, every time I'd look, I'd just be like, my TV's fine. I would just look, and they're so cheap, and I was just like, go do it. You know, it's $1,000, and you can get a really nice TV, and I'm just like, do you really need it? I mean, how much do you watch it? But now I have the reason to click buy it now.
I mean, even if you don't do it in the next year, pretty soon it's going to be the only option you have. There's only going to be 4K TVs.
True, but TVs last a long time, right? And this is
true.
I have one that's just out of frame to my left over here that's in my basement that I've had since 2008. And it's a nice Sony. It's 1080p. And I don't feel compelled. If it's working just fine, and that's what most of my content was in, I didn't have a good use case. And I don't mind spending money, but I didn't have a use case to replace it. It just seems superfluous. Like when I want to replace it, it's at the point when I, you know, the content is bountiful. What I had been doing in the past was, if I really liked something, I might go out and buy the Blu-ray that had a free iTunes copy with it. Let's say a movie was $19.99 on iTunes, or I could buy the Blu-ray for $19.99 and it had a free iTunes copy. Well, then I could always rip a copy from the Blu-ray and store it in Plex, but I also had an iTunes copy that I could watch anywhere. At this point, now iTunes is cheaper than Blu-ray, even the 4K ultra high def whatever Blu-rays. I was already sort of headed this way. Like, we've talked about this before, where things like Shout Factory, I'll still buy their stuff, but I don't see myself buying a Blu-ray ever again as long as I have this. I have my collection streamable everywhere. I have fast internet on my iPad, my iPhone, everywhere else, and at home. It's, if ever there was a time to move completely to a streaming only model, I'm not worried about getting locked into the Apple ecosystem, because we're way down that path already. It's a little far now to be worried about that. So totally excited about it.
Yeah, so I'll say this, 4K content, if you're on an internet provider, like I've got Xfinity and I get, you know, a 1 terabyte cap per month, the 1 month that we went over, my wife had streamed, I think the new season of Fuller House came out in 4K, and I watched like 2 seasons worth of Breaking Bad in 4K, and that was the only month we'd ever gone over our data cap here.
Giga power for the win. No cap. 1 gig up, 1 gig down. My backups are blazing. By the way, Jim, I forgot to use your partner code. I'll send you $5 for Backblaze. But I can tell you I have done 8 terabytes in like, I don't know, 11 days or something. I have 6 threads going on Backblaze right now, and I'm getting average upload of 200 megs. It is data flying out my house right now. It's amazing. But anyway, I digress. Yes, I agree with you. The data caps are going to be a problem, but you know that's going to bite everybody until unless you have some sort of competition. I don't know how I ended up with AT&T and Comcast competing with each other, but you know, kind of like that Alien versus Predator. It doesn't matter who wins, we lose. But right now, I am winning, baby, and I'm loving it.
He does this every week, Jason. We just have to listen through this. We should be getting paid like some sort of commercial for Giga Fiber or whatever it is.
It's not even every week on the podcast. It's almost every day when we chat.
It has been transformative, fellas. This is like in the land of the blind, the man with one eye is king. I am able to. I lived under the yoke of Comcast and their oppressive 10 meg up on business class for so long. It's liberating. Of course I'm excited. And now with the 4K, oh, it's going to be so much better. Oh, so good. So good.
Now if they'll just put gigabit interfaces on those new Apple TV 4Ks.
Didn't you guys, one of you guys or somebody on Telegram maybe or something this afternoon said that they checked the specs on the new Apple TV and it does have a gigabit Ethernet port? Did I hear that correctly?
I think Broom Man mentioned that this afternoon.
Very nice.
That's outstanding because I was kind of disappointed when I wired the we moved into this house October last year, and so you know, I ran Ethernet, you know, everywhere that I possibly could, right? And my speed test on Wi-Fi was 180 meg down, and when I plugged it into Ethernet, I was getting like 96 meg.
Yeah, we've been through there. So now I'm gonna fact check Mr. Broom, and I'm going to go in and check this really quickly. So I'm on the tech specs page. Oh my goodness, he is correct. Gigabit Ethernet, Bluetooth 5.0 too. Oh, I'm so happy. Oh goodness, I'm in the same boat as you. Of course, a few years ago I wired everything. Got the 5E, I think is what I used, but still. And as soon as I got the upgrade in speed, it's like, I can't wait to do this. And it's like, why am I getting 100 up? And I mean, 100 down, this is ridiculous. And having to go to Wi-Fi so I could get 300 just seemed so wrong on so many levels. So yay, short lived. I get to go back to hardwired for my TVs. I'm so happy. Free up a little more channels on the Wi-Fi in my house. This will be great. I am disappointed that Amazon Prime is still coming, quote, later this year. That was the only thing we heard about it. Come on, Amazon. How long does it take to write an app? Good Lord, you already have one on the iPhone and the iPad since forever ago. Just slap that sucker on. Let's go. Get it done. The hell?
I know I was kind of jumping the gun when I put the beta on my Apple TV, but I was just hoping Amazon app would just sort of sneak in there.
You were hoping whatever do-gooder was leaking all that information to the press ahead of time would somehow smuggle a copy of that app inside of the
That's right.
Inside of the build. No, I'm with you. That is the one thing holding me back.
Well, so speaking of the beta, if you were running the beta on any of your devices, iOS Gold Master is available today.
For both those in the developer program and on the public beta. So, way cool. Though I'm not going to put a profile on my Apple TV, and I'm probably too lazy to disconnect each one and bring them in and hook it up with a mini USB and go through all that crap when I can just do it over the air.
Well, there's no profile to put on the Apple TV. You just say, allow beta updates, and then it just goes.
Oh?
It's not like your phone where you say, add this profile.
I did not know that. Live and learn. I should definitely do that then. Why not? There's no harm.
So if you want to go back to the non-beta stream once the official version comes out next week, you could just turn off beta updates.
Let's see. Live news and games are coming to the TV app. Jim, you got to be a little excited about the game functionality that's coming to the TV app. I mean, that's something, right?
Yeah, the live sports functionality is going to be really cool where you could basically just click on the TV app and hey, show me what live sports are on right now. I'm definitely going to get a lot of use out of that. I just real quick mention of the I've been using the ESPN app with the 2-3-4 play to watch college football the last two Saturdays. And it's just so amazing. I love it, just being able to watch like a couple of games at once. And generally, whatever's on ABC, you can still stream on ESPN, so you can watch the main game that's on like the main ABC channel, and then you can watch whatever's on ESPN, and you can also watch if they have games on ESPNU or the SEC Network. You can watch all three, four of them all there at once and flip back and forth the sound. Man, I'm loving it.
I had it act a little janky on me when I was trying to use it. It was a little, there were some buffering issues and some other stuff. Like, it wasn't constantly like that, every so often, enough to be annoying at first, but
I had some issues with alternate screens freezing. Like, not the one I was watching always seemed to work fine. Every now and then the alternate screen would freeze, and I'd have to switch over to it and kind of make it full screen, and then it would come back, and then I could kind of revert back to whatever I was doing. But yeah, that was my issue too, is on some of the alternate screens every now and then they would freeze up. And I mean, I don't have gigabit, so
you and your peasant internet.
I've got crappy, I live in a 100-year-old building, you know, it's supposed to be 300 meg down spectrum, but it certainly ain't.
I'm pretty sure you live in that building from the first original Ghostbusters movie. I'm pretty sure Gozer the Gozerian is living in your fridge and causing all your Bluetooth issues and other network problems that you have. If you turn into a dog one of these days and attack Bill Murray, we'll know that my theory is correct.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's my building.
There is no Jim. There is only Zool.
There is no Bluetooth. There's only Zool. So the pricing starts the same at $179. I know a couple of years ago when the fourth generation came out, I didn't know which one to buy. I hated the stupid storage tiers in the Apple TV. To me, that is the dumbest thing ever. And honestly, you know, when the order time comes, I think I'm just going to go with the cheapest model. I don't see a use case for having to go and get the bigger storage, especially with the app slicing that they introduced a couple of releases back, where they do the load on demand for different apps. I don't see any reason. I don't even know why they're doing multiple tiers. I think that was, you know, to talk about a blatant cash grab from Apple. That to me still feels like a blatant cash grab. I don't know why they did it.
Well, the whole reason, you know, they said that they were putting it on there, obviously, we all know, is for games and apps and whatever, but you don't need 32 gigabytes of storage to put 50 apps on your Apple TV. I mean, at best you would need 8, and you know, that would be for the apps and any data it may cache or whatever. Now, I guess if you were going to buffer an entire movie or whatever, it would need, you know, some space, because it's going to be probably writing that into some cache and not into, you know, RAM. That's an assumption on my part, but anyway, I mean, 16 would be the ceiling, I would think, for that kind of thing.
Good point. What about you guys? You going with the cheapest model as well, which is something I don't normally say when it comes to Apple products?
No, because there's only a $20 difference. I mean, it's $179 or $199. So, you know, if I ever hit a single use case where I wanted more than 32 or needed more than 32, I would kick myself for not spending $20.
You have just convinced me, Jason. I'm going all out. I totally reverse everything that I just said.
Like, we knew. We knew better. You trickster. I call shenanigans.
I was sitting here on the fence, like, do I not? And it's like, I didn't realize it was that cheap between the tiers. I just assumed it was a normal
$150 gouge difference. Yeah, $100
I guess
difference.
It's fast now, but the thing they said today, where, you know, it's like twice as fast and the graphics are like four times as fast. And the first thing that I thought in my mind is the games that I've seen that I can play on my iPad Pro are pretty damn amazing now. I don't play a lot of them, but I've tried demos and played around with stuff, and there's some really neat stuff, games out there that you could play on an iPad Pro. And so if this device is going to have the same chip that an iPad Pro does in it and able to, you know, broadcast in 4K or, you know, just at least some of that in 1080p with those games, I think they've released a serious gameplay and machine for $199, if you ask me. I mean, if they could get the whole controller thing like worked out and good. Apple, I mean, they think about, I don't know, I just think maybe they, you know, they're smarter than I am, but it just seems like they could compete with the consoles now if they could really get this controller thing worked out and you know, something along that effect. Opinion, you know?
My two cents there is, I'm someone who owns the MFI controllers for the Apple TV and the iPad and whatever now. The ones that look like the Xbox 360 type of controllers. I think where Apple sort of missed the boat in the previous generation was requiring that every game be compatible with the remote, which is a noble goal, but that really hampers what you're capable of doing, right? If you're going to have a game system and you're pushing it as a game system, if you're only going to do sort of, you know, Nintendo Wii style games, then yeah, that silly little controller is fine. But Apple ought to just bite the bullet and make, you know, controllers that resemble the SteelSeries controllers, or just buy SteelSeries and do their controllers, or, you know, OEM them or whatever, and be done with it. Because I totally agree. What's really hurt it is, I think used to, you couldn't require that a game had a third-party controller. You had to make it so that it was it was compatible with the remote. I don't know if that's still the case, but, you know, I've played some fun games, even on the existing Apple TV that I really like. It's just, I have to remember to go and get my controller from the drawer and sit down and do it, and it just never occurs me. I don't have that problem when I fire up the Xbox. I'm going in with a definite goal in mind. So they definitely could, as good of a good game platform as the iPhone and the iPad are, there's no reason they couldn't do this. I would happily go and do some of those old Grand Theft Auto games that I have on the iPad and play them on the Apple TV if I can use a controller and I'm not limited in what I'm able to do. So I certainly hope they do that. And that was a use case that, you know, I didn't consider before that you sort of reminded me, is the gaming aspect of it. And again, the orders begin on September 15th, this Friday, available September 22nd. So I'll probably just dip my toe in the water and get one of the Apple TVs to begin with. I mean, I don't have a 4K TV yet, so there's not really, you know, I don't have to go and say I'm replacing all four today, but, you know, maybe one I'll do. And those don't come out with the same frequency as the other products, so I'll probably do that.
I'm definitely going to watch and see if Best Buy or, you know, the other type places do some big specials for the weekend to try to sell up some 4K TVs, because they've got to know it's coming now. They've got to know this rush is coming. So, you know, try to put some on sale and see if they can get people in the stores. And I would definitely bite the bullet, especially now that I know the new iPhone I won't have to pay for it for another 2 months.
You know, that's an excellent point, too. Something that this time of year always sucks when they announce all these products, because my credit card takes a beating. But at least the fact that I'm on the upgrade program with the iPhone is that I'm paying, like, what, 40, 45 bucks a month, whatever it is. So it's not like, you know, I can, if I splurge on the Apple TV or I splurge on the watch, it's still going to hurt, but it's not going to hurt as if, oh, now I need to upgrade my wife's iPhone, my iPhone, an Apple TV, and whatever else. I can sort of spread that pain around so it doesn't hurt all at once. And because we get to the iPhone 10 that doesn't come out to the end of October, you really are sort of delaying that pain. So that's a nice thing. Great point. And as a matter of fact, I'll be watching Slick Deals with great attention for some of the 4K TVs, because they are super cheap now, and why not?
Well, make sure and share, because I think I want to go at least 65 inches. My TV right now is 55, so I figure I need to go up at least 10 if I'm going to get a new TV. So 65 is probably my sweet point.
I was listening to last week's Marco podcast, and it was John that was talking about 4K TVs, but they were talking about they found a calculator online that allows you to figure out sort of the difference between 1080 and 4K and your viewing distance based on the size of the television. Because say you got a 4K, but it was only, say, 50 inches, but you were sitting like, and I'm using these are arbitrary numbers I'm using, but you were sitting at, say, like 8 feet away from it, you wouldn't be able to tell, your eyes wouldn't be able to tell the difference between 4K and 1080. I was going to look at one of these calculators and see, you know, where the sweet spot would be so I could upgrade my television, you know, and get the right size for the viewing distance to make sure I see this difference, you know, because one of the selling points, like they were talking about on the announcement today, was it's not only resolution, but it's the color depth the color quality or whatever that you achieve with HDR. 4K is sort of those, the 1-2 punch, whereas 1080 was just resolution, really. So I think we should put that in our show notes as one of those calculators, if you're interested in putting it in there.
Duly noted. I'll go back and find that ATP and put that in there. Jason?
I'll say this. I've got two 65-inch Sony 4K HDRs, and they are absolutely beautiful. I mean, just from anywhere in the room, the picture is outstanding. I will say that I have a friend who has a 75-inch 4K HDR, and it is glorious. I mean, there is a big, big difference between 65 and 75, but there is also a huge price jump. So if you're looking, like for instance, in my class, if you stayed in the same class of Sony, but just added the 10 inches in diagonal, it was like another $1,000. So after having two 65s for over a year now, I think that's really the sweet spot in viewing size as well as price point.
I'm a big fan of Sony's TVs. I've always had good experience with those, and they last a really long time.
Yeah, the one in my basement is Circuit City closing last day of being in business circa 2008. That's still kicking strong.
This is definitely something that'll push me. I mean, my TV it wasn't a top of the line when I bought it, and it was still, you know, pretty expensive at 55, four, five, 6 years ago. I don't even know how long it's been now, but it's definitely time to upgrade. I've almost done it a couple of times the last couple of months, like I said, and just hadn't been able to pull the trigger because, I mean, I'm home 3 days a week now, but it seems like I'm about to be traveling a little bit less, so I'll be home a little bit more, and it's football season, you know, all these things that go together, you know, get the bigger TV and enjoy it for a few months. So this fall, so, you know, I'm going to be watching and see what I can find. I guess this is probably not great for the podcast to discuss this, but 4K HDR, do those things always go together? I mean, if you're buying a TV, can it be just 4K and not HDR, or is those things always go together? Okay. So if
they do not go together.
Okay. So if you're shopping, you want to make sure it's 4K HDR, not just a 4K.
Correct. And I'll say this, right? The percentage of TVs that are 4K HDR today are heavily skewed to including HDR, whereas if you were looking a couple years ago, they were 4K and HDR was the new next thing that was essentially, you know, also more expensive, right? So there's more of an abundance of TVs with HDR today than there were, say, 2 years ago.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Time for the thing that we've all been looking forward to, the iPhone part of the show. So,
woohoo!
They skipped the 7S. There is no S, at least not this year. So iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus is what we got.
Can we just say that there's an iPhone 8 coming out and just skip right over it? I mean, who out there is interested in hearing about the iPhone 8? I mean, let me hear you shout right now. I didn't hear anybody from our audience shout about anything about the iPhone 8, Brian.
Tumbleweed and crickets. Well, you know, those that are... Actually, we won't spend a lot of time on the 8 and 8 Plus, but I feel that we at least owe it to our listeners to at least mention.
No, I'm joking. It's funny. I felt really bad for the Apple people on stage today because everything got spoiled for them over the last 3 days. I mean, and this would, you know, it could have been a big one more thing today, right? I mean, we knew it was coming, but we didn't know what it was going to be named till a couple of days ago and a couple of these things. So I actually felt kind of bad. You know, that they had this, the actual one more thing and the new Steve Jobs theater and all this. And we all knew what was coming. We knew exactly what was coming, right?
Sadly, we did. Or not sadly, but yeah, at least it was confirmed. So the biggest surprise, we're going to pretend that people don't know some of these things, or they didn't know, they didn't see it coming. I do like the fact that they have the glass backs returning. I really liked the glass backs when they were on the iPhone 4. I think they look better. And I don't know, I like the way that it feels in your hand typically a lot more than I do the aluminum-backed phones, or aluminium, as Mr. Johnny Ive would call them.
Well, I'll say this, the biggest surprise feedback that I've gotten, four separate friends, including my wife, all say that they're bummed that the iPhone X is smaller than the 8 Plus. Like, they like the feeling of their current 7 Plus and, you know, aren't really that interested in going down in size of the device in their hand. I may actually be up this Friday morning ordering my wife an 8 Plus because she may decide she doesn't want the 10.
But isn't the 10 the actual screen real estate 0.3 inch larger than the Plus?
It is, but for her, it's, you know, like, she's thinking about in her hand. She really loves the Touch ID. She's not very resistant to change. And luckily, you know, for me, she's fairly technology savvy, but the 10 didn't really float her boat that much.
Interesting. Interesting.
It is still a nice phone. I guess the colors were what? Silver, space gray, and did they call it rosy gold? Is that what they called it? When I was transcribing this, that's what I swear I heard.
I thought they just said some new gold. I don't know what they really said.
I think they said tacky gold.
It was not an appealing color to me.
I swear, I don't know who buys that stuff. I don't get it. It looks terrible to me, always has. My pet peeve, and we've mentioned this before, is they called it wireless charging. It's not wireless charging, Apple. There's a wire right in the picture. It's inductive charging. Call it what it is. Wireless charging is a completely different thing, and it's in its infancy. This is inductive charging, which, we'll get to that when we talk about the AirPower stuff. But hey, at least it supports the... inductive charging, which is nice. The 6-core 64-bit 74% faster than the A10 with a 30% faster GPU than the A10. I wonder what they're going to use that for, right? All that AR capability that's clearly what this is designed for is really exciting. I really can't wait to see this and the iPhone 10 as well to see how it's going to handle that. They're saying it's what the most durable glass in a smartphone ever. The first thing I thought of is great. Now there's more glass on your phone when you drop it to break it. But I don't know. I didn't see that many people with iPhone 4s back when they had the glass backs where people were dropping and breaking those.
Yeah, but I bet the glass on the iPhone 4, like if you took the glass off the front and back, are thicker than either one of these whole phones is now. Just the glass pieces. We're talking about super hard glass, but it is awful thin on the front and back of this phone.
So finally, we're getting True Tone in a phone, which I think is long overdue. Having seen it in the iPads, I'm really surprised we didn't get this last year, to be quite honest, since it's been in the iPad Pro model since what?
Early last year.
March of 2016, something like that. It's been out a long time.
I mean, I still, every day when I look at my 10.5-inch iPad Pro and I'm just using that screen, it was sitting on my desk the other day and I looked down on it and it kind of reminded me of, I remember the first time I saw one of the newer Kindles and just looking at the screen and I thought, you know, that really does just look kind of like a piece of paper and it's just there. And, you know, I mean, because it's static, right? And I was looking at that iPad screen thinking that's in color and super clear. I mean, there's no even hint of any kind of pixelation whatsoever. Just seeing it sitting there, you know, on the desk and everything is just so clear. And then with the True Tone, the screen still, when people see it and then, you know, I bring it to a meeting or something and they'll see the screen on there and they're real surprised, real shocked by it, you know, compared to even, you know, the other iPads that they're selling now. So
yeah, the True Tone is pretty remarkable. You know, I recently upgraded to the 10.5 iPad Pro from an iPad Air 2. I also have a older Mini 2. Just like going back to the Mini 2 is not an option, right? I mean, that device looks so bad compared to Pro 10.5. So to be able to get True Tone on a phone, it's one of those things you really can't appreciate it for what it is until you've seen it and that becomes your new norm.
Yeah, I'll have to admit, I'm getting older and my eyes are getting worse. And the 12.9 that I had, it wasn't as comfortable sitting on the couch doing things, just holding it in your hand. But this 10.5, I find myself using it a whole lot more out the house, around the house, compared to how much I used to pick up my phone. So, I mean, I know we're not here to talk about that device, but just saying it's pretty impressive. And I'm, you know, hoping the iPhone 10, you know, with that bigger screen and all the goodness will be that good as well.
The emphasis on the CPU design for Metal 2 and the machine learning that you can use, I guess having the faster processor on device is really important considering that Apple doesn't send your data out to the cloud. So I guess what we're seeing, and we talk about the iPhone 10 in just a moment, is that many of the features that you would expect, a lot of the same core functionality is going to be in both phones. And it is quite a step up. I don't know. The A11 Bionic processor, I do want to do some more reading on that. But they talked about the neural networks in your pocket, which we'll talk about in a minute, which is really kind of fascinating and exciting. I guess they've really been making some real jumps on the CPU side of things.
I think that's a good show title.
What's that?
Neural networks in your
pocket. Is that a neural net in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
And the whole A11 Bionic, why do we need Bionic? That sounds like a Samsung thing, doesn't it? Like, why can't it be just the A11? We don't need the word Bionic. It's like Lexus or Mercedes, you know, they have numbers and they have letters. They don't have names for their cars. It's not like a Ford Fiesta. You know, this is, you know, the Apple A11. A11's plenty enough. Why do we need A11 Bionic? I don't get that. It seems not Apple-like. Like somebody overrode Johnny Ive on that one because he would have just went A11.
I agree with you on that. It does seem sort of superfluous. And I think we'll talk more about the iPhone 8 in another episode. I know it's time to upgrade my wife's phone. I think she's still on a 6S, and I think I'm probably going to put her on an iPhone 8, not the Plus. She sees my Plus phone. She's like, I don't like it. It's too, it's just, it doesn't fit well in the hand. Don't want it. On to the iPhone 10, but when we get the 8, maybe we'll talk more about it then, and I actually have some time to play with it. But it does look pretty interesting, but, you know, not groundbreaking, not like that 10. So a mixture of glass and steel, Super Retina display, OLED. I like that 5.8-inch diagonal display. I like the removal of the bezel. That is something that, I don't know, it looks freaky with the way that you use it with iOS 11, and that's sort of the thing that's sort of freaking me out. So we had talked about some of the rumors a few weeks ago. Tap screen to wake and no home button. I guess that's not really strange. For me, the swipe up from the bottom to go to the home screen and the half swipe to get to the switcher is, that surprised me.
I don't care what his mama calls him. I'm going to call it the iPhone X. So you were talking about the swiping. The one of those that really, really bugged me is to get to Control Center now, you swipe down from the top on the right-hand side of the top of the screen, which is not natural. If you're like me, if you're holding the phone, I can't swipe from the top right side of the screen when I'm holding my phone one-handed. I can activate Control Center from the bottom now one-handed very easily and hit buttons on Control Center. But I can't swipe from the top right down when I'm holding even the 7 that I have now. I can't do that. And this phone's going to be slightly bigger in the hand than this one is. So I definitely won't be able to swipe down from the top right to get to Control Center without some hand maneuvering or using a second hand. I'm just saying that gesture definitely bothered me that's how you're going to have to do Control Center. That was the one
you'll notice the whole time that Craig is doing the demo, he's doing it with two hands. And that's, you know, that's one of those, not necessarily a deal killer, but, you know, a lot of people, even though you're not supposed to be doing things, you know, say driving with your phone in your hand. I mean, a lot of people use their phone one-handed. I mean, they may want to be walking down the hallway, holding a coffee and texting or whatever. And that's why some people use that arc-shaped touch keyboard, you know, arc-shaped swipe keyboard or whatever, you know. And if the phone is, you know, 6 inches tall and you're not going to be able to reach up that high, like you're saying.
I mean, I think we've covered this in the past. I love the Plus models. I love that bigger screen, but because I can't use it one-handed, just walking around doing it, I don't own one because, you know, I do that a lot. You know, I'm carrying something in one hand and doing some, you know, doing my phone in the other, and or walking the dogs, things like that. So that's definitely going to take some getting used to, is that Control Center from the top right like that.
The iPhone X is, dimension wise, it is smaller than the Plus. It's the same thickness as the 8 Plus, but it is about 50 millimeters smaller in height. And what was the?
Yeah, I looked that up immediately today. It's closer to, actually closer to the size to the non-Plus than it is the Plus. If you were going to like just take the how much it grew, it didn't grow like over halfway from the non-Plus to the Plus size, but the screen is actually bigger than the Plus size, which obviously I love that part. I mean, the bigger screen was the best thing about the Plus. So, I mean, you know, there's no way I'm not going to get this phone. I'm just saying that's going to take some getting used to.
I didn't mean to say 50. It's 15 millimeters shorter height and then about 8 millimeters shorter on the width. So, I mean, you're talking about maybe a thumbnail height and half a thumbnail width.
So you don't use that feature, or you didn't on the Plus, where you would tap the screen and the it would come down half height and let you do things with one hand? You never use that, Jim?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's somewhat useful, and I guess is that going to be a thing on this one? Because you don't have a button at the bottom to double press for the screen to come down now. I mean, how's that supposed to work? I mean, when I double tap somewhere on the screen, it's going to activate whatever I'm tapping on. It's not the button. So what activates the screen to come down on this new iPhone X?
Great question. And then one that they didn't answer. So I don't know.
Somebody asked that in the back. Somebody asked that. Somebody's going to, you know, give it a couple of days and that's going to end up in some story on 9to5 Mac or something where somebody was like, well, why doesn't this work? And Craig would be like, shut up. It's a full screen phone.
Get bigger hands already.
I use that screen drop feature and I don't even have a Plus. I just have the regular, you know, regular sized phone.
Oh, I didn't know it worked on the regular phones. I thought it was just a Plus thing.
No, us normal people have it too, Brian.
You and your Donald Trump hands.
Hush. What about you, Jason? Are you a Plus user or a not Plus user?
So this year I'm a Plus user. I guess when the first Plus came out, I bought it, and then there was the whole first weekend Bendgate story, and I got scared that, you know, my phone wasn't going to last more than a week because I'm pretty rough on them. So I took it back and got the normal size. But I'm definitely interested in the iPhone X model, right? Like, I don't love the Plus form factor, so I wouldn't mind a little bit smaller. But the screen real estate and being bezel-less, right? Like, I never would have thought going from a 9.7 iPad to the 10.5 iPad Pro would be such a big jump. So I'm looking forward to kind of going from that screen real estate of the 7 Plus to the 5.8 on the iPhone 10.
And keep in mind, this is sort of like this is something we alluded to before. This is sort of like the mid-size iPhone in terms of overall size, right? This is in between what the 8 and the 8 Plus would be, and you still get the bigger screen. This is the one that Goldilocks chose. This is the mid-size but still get best of both worlds device.
This is the M5 of the iPhone world.
A 1% Goldilocks club. Because it's more expensive, but it's the one that everybody will want.
So I assume you're going to buy it anyway. But what if you can't do the half height thing? Is that going to be is it something where you're going to take it back and go get an 8?
No. I mean, I want the real estate, and I'll just have to deal with it. The bigger screen of the other one. One of the things with the other one is I couldn't even type on it because it was so big. This one, I'll at least be able to hold one handed and type on it, I think, because of the. You know, it's just a little bit bigger than the regular model, you know, and smaller than the Plus. So, I mean, I think that was my biggest thing is I couldn't even type one-handed on that big one because I was always nervous that I was going to drop it because I just couldn't, you know, hold it and type one-handed on it. Whereas this one, I mean, I really hope I'll be able to hold it and type one-handed on it. I mean, it looks like a gorgeous phone and, you know, I'm definitely going with it. So we'll see how that goes and report back in 2 months and let you know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be totally worth it. So let's see, what are some of the other features of said phone? So what, a 2436 by 1125 resolution, 458 PPI. I think that was one of the things that leaked too from one of the iOS 11 dumps that came up. So that wasn't really a shock. The Siri button on the side, that's pretty interesting too. And I'm assuming the police feature where you tap the button 5 times to disable Face ID, which we'll get to, still works. So in case you find yourself in a situation where you might be forced to forcibly unlock your phone, you can still protect yourself.
You have to look away from your phone like it's Medusa so they can't compel you to unlock your phone with your face.
Or just close your eyes. Don't look at it, Indy. As long as that arc is open, don't look at it and you'll be fine.
And they did mention one, I think I only heard them say it one time today, but that the button on the side is bigger now. So I don't know if, you know, they just want to make that a little bit, if they think you're going to be using it more or something like that. But they did say the one button on the side is bigger now than it has been in the past.
So are screen captures going to be a combination of that button and a volume button?
I think it's probably going to have to be, right?
We're running out of buttons.
Fair point.
I just want my physical keyboard back, like on my BlackBerry. That would be the best.
That sarcasm doesn't really work well on you, Brad.
Just like excitement.
Exactly. So let's talk about Face ID for unlocking. So that's really the killer feature. We knew this was coming, but we didn't know how it was going to work. Very, very impressive is the way that it sounds like it's going to work. So it sounds like they flood your face with 30,000 IR dots to map your face to figure it out. It's going to work in the dark. It has an IR camera that can check that if you're unlocking. It is not fooled by glasses, haircut, growing a beard, etc. So that's, again, kind of impressive.
Or faceless men masks
if you're a girl who has no name.
I bet the girl that has no name could probably fool it.
I don't know, man. They had those Hollywood masks. They worked with folks to make sure that wasn't going to be a thing. And they so our Android friend that I love to imitate on the show goes, "All this Apple stuff's crap. I had that in Samsung a year ago. This is fake news." He, of course, was texting me. I had to put him on mute because he was just blowing up my phone. And I sent him the link where the Note 8 last year is like, "Yeah, you had that feature last year. Look at this. You could actually unlock it with someone's picture from Facebook or Instagram." Yeah, that's a great feature. Got nothing back. He didn't respond to that. All the smack he was talking about, how, "Oh, there's nothing innovative. This is terrible. I've had OLED for years." Yeah, but
my boss said the same thing. He's a Samsung guy, and he's like, "They're just now getting OLED." I mean, he was honest. I mean, he wasn't, you know, joking. He was like, "They're just now getting OLED? What, you know, what the hell is up with that? We've had that for, you know, a couple of years now." I'm like, "Yeah, it's because they make so many screens. They had to make like a million a day. And they, you know, they want high quality, not crappy OLED." So
yeah, I remember what Phil was saying about the problem with OLED before was they couldn't pull off brightness and whatnot. And now Apple's able to pull off, you know, brightness plus some more features that they weren't able to get with traditional OLED.
I kind of feel like when they go to their supplier, and we know that Samsung is actually supplying the OLEDs, they're the exclusive provider for the iPhone X, but they have requirements that they want to see in their devices. I mean, that's a good point. It's not that it's necessarily impossible, but it's, we have these standards. Can we do this and get this type of yield? And I think that's probably a large part of why that is you're making, if you're Samsung, you're making, you know, millions of phones, only a small percentage. And that's what I was trying to drive home to mine and Mr. Young's mutual Android buddy. You're talking about a small sliver of phones that get released every year that have this capability.
I think your word that you used is yield. That's the key word here is when you're making these screens, if even 2-3% of them aren't up to snuff, I mean that makes the screens that much more expensive to make. If 5% of the batch is no good that they can't use, and Apple builds in such quantities that, you know, they have to be able to have the quality that they want and be able to have the yield of what they're building, you know, be high enough to make the margins that they want to make. So I think that's a good word. I think I've heard them use that before too, or maybe it was stratechery, or, you know, one of those that, you know,
economies of scale.
Yeah, it's a good word. They, you know.
Excellent point. So yeah, I mean, getting the OLED now, I don't think it's that huge a deal. And it's still going to be, the yield is still going to be so low that they can only afford to put it on one model, right? I mean, it's still going to be hard to come by just because you can't do it in the numbers that they're used to.
Well, I think it's already a testimonial for the fact that it's not being released. You can't even pre-order the thing to the end of October because I think they don't have the yield to make it available now. And then one of my concerns, right, is, you know, if you're not up at midnight Pacific time, you know, what's the backlog going to look like, you know, say at 6 a.m., you know, is it going to be delayed shipping 4 weeks because they're not able to keep up with the demand?
Oh, you know, it's going to be, it's probably by 3:05 Eastern time. It's going to be a done deal. But yeah, the Face ID looks really, really nice. And that was for what I was trying to get across to our mutual Android friend. You can release something and have the internet equivalent of first on a comment board and say, yeah, we have it. Look, we have it. And it can be fooled with Instagram and Facebook. And it's garbage. It's a garbage implementation if you do it like that. If you have something where you can't fool it with masks, and it, according to what they're saying, the ability for someone to unlock your iPhone to bypass Touch ID, I think, or fool it into thinking it was you was 1 in 50,000. They're saying that it's 1 in a million that somebody can do this with Face ID. That's really saying something. So still using the secure enclave that protected Touch ID, and it requires your attention to look at it. So again, as we mentioned, you got to look at it. That I'm really excited about that. I think that's impressive. I want to see that this implementation lives up to the hype, and I'm guessing it probably does.
To use your example, I don't want to buy the first driverless car, right? No thanks. Let somebody else beta test that for a while before I get in it.
If someone's making 40 different models of car per year, and it's a feature they can mark off on a checklist, that's great. If a company is making 3 different types of cars a year, and that's the flagship feature of that particular model, I'm going to trust the one that has a lot more focus to get that right and get it right out of the gate, particularly when they've had a history of getting a lot of these things right out of the gate. We've all probably goofed on Touch ID. It was still better in its first implementation than things that could be fooled that came out from comparable Android phones, because it was just sort of a, hey, let's get this to market, and we'll worry about how well it works later. And that's not how Apple rolls.
No, I agree. I mean, I don't even know what the date is. We can look it up. But the facial recognition stuff came out a couple of years ago, and it was great for, you know, it sounded great on a keynote. Hey, look at this. And then 3 days later, so many people were busting it, like you said, with Facebook photos or printing out stuff, that it became a non-functioning feature that, you know, if you were smart, you weren't going to use it because it was basically useless. It just demoed really well 3 years ago, you know, and now Apple's actually taken a whole lot of time. And I mean, the time they took today to explain how that works was really impressive, and talking about the infrared and the 30,000 dots and all the mapping and how it learns your face, and it learns your face as it's changing, you know, like if you start growing out a beard, it, you know, it kind of learns that on you. I mean, that's just crazy, right? I mean,
think about this. You unlock your phone multiple times every day, so it's collecting all of that data multiple times a day.
Right. That's a lot of sample data. So that's a great way to for it to learn.
And the bionic neural engine that they're saying is a part of the A11 has 600 billion operations per second. This is not a trivial thing. I think this gets glossed over. And that's why when I heard some folks saying, oh, this is nothing impressive, it's like, did you not just notice that there's facial recognition that is more sophisticated than anything that's existed before? And you're saying that's not a big deal. They trust that enough that your credit card is going to be authenticated with this. The other things that you use, your secure data, if they're saying you can use it for this and it's that secure, it ain't going to be open with an Instagram photo or with a Facebook photo. This is something that's actually impressive and innovative. And if Samsung releases that feature on a phone and it doesn't work and it didn't, then who cares? Nobody notices. Nobody used it anyway. And only like 5% of Android users even had it, if that.
Yeah,
if this doesn't work, I mean, that would be a big black eye. They have much further to fall, Apple does, if something doesn't work, than the esteemed competition.
Right. I mean, this ain't Equifax, right? I mean.
So let's see. The other big thing that's going to drive a lot of these phones is the Animoji, which was really, really, I got to say, I normally look at that stuff kind of like, eh, who cares? But I got to admit, that's going to sell a lot of phones. Being able to take images and video of your face and create emojis on the fly that you can send to people doesn't seem like a big deal. It's going to be a big
Watching
deal.
Watching Craig, like once he sent the Fox and emoji to Tim and it talk as if he were doing a voiceover was really cool, because it was almost like the lips on that Fox were moving as if you could see Craig's lips moving. It was pretty cool.
I thought the Snapchat demo was even cooler, where he did like the like Mr. Wrestler mask or whatever, you know, or did that. I mean, you know, with the AR and the, I thought that was even cooler than the emojis. Personally,
that was like the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, that's who it was. Ultimate Warrior, where it just mapped that to his face and it was perfect. I mean, that was awesome. I mean, just think of the possibilities. I mean, you know, you'll be able to, they'll have all sorts of stuff, you know, like Iron Man and Spider-Man and all kind of masks like that, you know, you'll basically be able to map to your face and do some really cool stuff like that. It's going to be cool.
The AR capabilities of turning yourself into another person, though, if we have to pick a wrestler, I'd much rather be turned into Ric Flair than the Ultimate Warrior, but that's just me.
Woo!
Woo! Well, not to poo-poo it, but that's a good segue into, I guess, comments that I read on Facebook were that, you know, Steve Jobs would be rolling in his grave knowing that one of the key features of, you know, the flagship iPhone is that you could do an animated poo emoji.
I think he would be just fine with that. And I think that, and at least, you know, they at least had the good humor to call that out. Hey, it's the pinnacle of whatever. We're making talking poop on stage.
Yep, they called it out. I mean, I think in one of the video with Johnny Ive, I think he even, I don't think they made him talk with the poop emoji. I don't know. He was the unicorn and something else, or maybe he was. I don't know. I'll have to rewatch some of those videos.
I know he did the unicorn. That was definitely definitely a part of it. But yeah, these little features they take a while to take hold. But you know, I get text messages now from my mom that have animated GIFs in it that she's doing from Jiffy from the tray inside of. And to me, the first time she did it, like, I can't believe she figured this out on her own without me showing her this. This is transformative. When they can do things like that, I don't know. That's going to sell a lot of phones. It's one of those things that people are going to go crazy for. And it seems like, you know, to tech people, that seems like, this is kind of silly. No, that's going to sell a lot of phones right there.
No, you're right. I mean, that's going to sell a lot more phones than, say, this the Face ID feature that we're all just gushing over and the technology that went into all that. But just in the general population, that feature will sell more phones than telling somebody that your face could unlock it. I really think that's true.
And it's looking like it has battery life. They're claiming 2 more hours than the iPhone 7. So I'll be interested to see how they pull that off. But again, when you're controlling the entire software and hardware stack, you can sort of tightly integrate in that way. So I guess it shouldn't be too surprising. 12 megapixels. Pixels front and back, and the dual optical image stabilization like you have on the Plus, which is nice. I mean, to me, that's always been the best reason to get the Plus, is that even if you hate the extra size of the phone, you get a much better camera in that regard. So nice to see that that's going to be on there. And of course, it will be doing the inductive charging as well, just like the 8 and the 8 Plus.
And they did not mention that, I mean, I guess they sort of mentioned it, that you're not going to get an inductive charging mat in any with the phone. It's all, you know, it will do it, but the phone doesn't come with that. You're gonna have to buy that separate, you know.
So in a very un-Apple-like move, they pushed other people's charging mats, Belkin, and I forget who the other company was.
Mophie
was the other one, that they pushed. And I had a friend of mine texting me at the same time, like, Apple doesn't have a mat. I'm like, wait for it. And of course, you know,
next
by the end
year,
of the
year, yeah. Yeah, so they're running a little behind on their mat.
That new combo mat where you could charge the three, where they showed them charging three devices at once, and it all registers on the iPhone screen.
If I had to guess, they're probably trying to figure out how to increase that throughput, because that's the big thing, right? Charging over inductive charging is slow. I mean, it's always going to be slower than plugging in a lightning cable. And we'll jump right into that as well. AirPower is the name of the inductive charging mat that Apple has, where you can charge your phone and soon your AirPods, which please let them release a standalone case. Please let them release a standalone case. I really want to be... Now, that is something that I would actually use. I have a little... It's some sort of silicone case that I actually run a lightning cable through now that was like $5 off Amazon. And I have those scattered throughout the house, and I'll charge my AirPods on that. But that they charge so quickly. That's a perfect use case for using inductive charging. The watch doesn't take a long time to charge. Perfect use case for inductive charging. I'm a little bit dubious on the phone and, you know, forget it on the iPad because that would never work. You have to fast charge that sucker to get it going anytime soon. But, and of course, they're not offering it on that. But I don't know. I'm sort of lukewarm on the whole thing.
I saw one of the phones today said that it was going to have fast charging. I'm not sure if it was the 10 or the 8, but I saw it when they listed it there on the side.
My guess, that's going to be a 10-only feature, I would bet you. I mean, not even all the iPads have it. Only the Pros have it. So I would guess. We'll have to go back and look. And again, we're recording this just a couple hours after the end of the keynote. So, you know, we'll probably do a follow-up or something and get all the corrections on this as we can. We took as many copious notes as we could.
So the watch already has the inductive charging, obviously. So I'm guessing that the Series 2 or Series 1 watch would actually work with the AirPower mat, you think? Or do you think that it's going to have to be a Series 3 watch because of whatever new, you know, do you think that the new watch has a little bit different technology that's going to work with the same inductive charging that the phone and new AirPod case will? Or do you think the watches all function still the same? That's kind of interesting.
If they're following the Qi standard, right, I don't think the previous versions are up to that standard, right? So I don't know if they're going to build something into their own that makes it backwards compatible, or if they're going to just make the whole thing compatible with just the Qi spec.
Something to think about, though.
That is a great point. I mean, since the previous models did support inductive charging, I guess the big question is when your watch arrives, are the chargers backwards compatible with the Series 0, 1, and 2? That I don't know, right? If I'm able to use the same charger for my Series 2 and my Series 3, you would think that I should be able to use the power mat, but great question, though. There's no guarantee of that, so...
I just checked the specs, and both the 8 and the 10 support fast charging.
Impressive. Way to go, Apple, for not locking that feature out into the more exclusive phone. I'm honestly surprised.
You know, I don't really think they view the 8 as necessarily... I mean, I think the 8, they gave it its due to... I mean, as far as, you know, the time and the speech and everything. I don't think they feel like it's any less phone. It's just kind of more of what we've been giving you. I mean, they're basically have the same hardware on the inside as far as the processors, right? The screens are not exactly the same. I mean, you got the Super Retina or, you know, whatever in the new one. But, you know, I think, I mean, the iPhone 8 is going to be a serious nice machine, you know, nice, really nice phone. So, you know, it doesn't, I guess it doesn't surprise me that they added that. And then when they actually showed the lineup page, they still showed the 6 and the 7 and the 8 and the X and the whatever the, what was it called, the Classic or whatever, what did they call that the one that they re-released with the 6 specs in it?
The SE.
So yeah, they still had this SE, the 6, 7, 8, and 10 all being for sale right now, which just seems like a huge lineup for Apple. I mean, maybe the 6 is more of, you know, for developing countries still. I don't know, but that just seemed like a lot of... They usually don't have that many older models out.
For the emerging markets, you still got to keep those models around. And it's not like they're terrible phones. It's just... people are willing to buy them, so, you know, why stop selling them? So I totally get that. And you're right.
Well, the SE has the same hardware as the 6S, so why not?
Yeah, I mean, they're not bad phones.
No, I can see selling the SE, I think, because it's got a niche marketplace because it's small. But the fact that the 6 and the 7S, right? Is that what
are we on the
6S and the 7? So it's
the 6S and the 7 are, you know, are so close to one another.
The 6S, the
7,
the 8, and the 10.
You know, that it surprises me that we still have the 6S and the 7 around. It seems like one or the other.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. Something of note is that the AppleCare Plus cost $199 for the iPhone X, which is a sort of a market increase from what it's been in the past. But I'm sure that's probably related to the technology for Face ID and the OLED. That doesn't look cheap. So it's not a big deal, I don't think. If you're doing the Apple leasing program, and if you're not, you really should. If you're getting a new phone every year, it's going to be baked into the cost anyway. So you're really not going to. You're not going to notice much of a difference, I don't think.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the things that I'm bummed about, is that I'm on the Verizon new iPhone every year plan, but the way that that works is you essentially are paying off half the device before you're eligible, right? So by the time I get my new device, I will have probably made 14 payments. And when I get the new device, let's say that Apple catches up with production and whatever the iPhone XS next year might be, right? If they release that in September, then I'm going to have to wait until November before I can upgrade, because I won't have paid off half the device until November.
I'm in the same boat as you, Jason. I'm on the Verizon one-year thing, too.
If you're on the Apple plan, you're eligible for an upgrade after like 6 months. So that's something to consider. Switching to the superior plan, the gigabit of upgrade plans, if you will.
Just kick a man when he's down.
Now, the carriers are always going to screw you more than Apple will, I think. So I checked the upgrade eligibility on mine, and I'd hit that. And I think they said 6 months. I think that's in the terms of the deal. The other thing that's nice, from what we understand, is previously, if you were on the upgrade plan, you had to go into an Apple store to get the upgrade. And now you can just do it by mail. I think they've been doing that for the last few months. So fingers crossed that I won't get screwed on when it comes time to upgrade, that I'll actually be able to use the app and do it. So, of course, the other big announcement was, whereas you can order the iPhone 8 and some of the other things they announced today on Friday and get them the following Friday, you're not going to be able to order the iPhone 10 until October 27th, and it ships November 3rd. So that's kind of surprising. I'm sort of shocked that, you know, when they first launched the Apple Watch, I was able to order the steel Apple Watch at the same time everyone else ordered the aluminum. I just didn't get it for, you know, like a month and a half, 2 months, something like that, until it finally came out, which was excruciating at the time. So I kind of wish they were doing that in this case, but breaking it up like that too also means the surge of people that want the 8 will be out of the way, so that when October 27th rolls around, maybe it won't be as bad.
Right, but do you think this cannibalizes Apple touting their first weekend sales, right? That's kind of a metric that we've heard for many years, and the launch of this being, you know, later in October.
I think enough normal people don't care about the iPhone X. I think that folks like us are in sort of the minority, and it's still a large minority, but I think more people are going to want that 8 and the 8 Plus, and they having the top of the line, the one that's post $1,000 in price, is going to be a turnoff to a lot of people. Even if you're going to spread it out, of course, over multiple payments over multiple years, now that you can still do that in a similar way that we used to with the contracts, I don't know. I think enough people are going to go for the 8 and the 8 Plus.
With the price of the phone plus AppleCare, I mean, you're looking at $100 a month now for an X or a 10, sorry. I mean, you're looking at $100 a month probably as the lease fee if you're paying it off in a year. Now, I guess most of them actually prorated to 2 years, and then you turn it in after 1 year. So maybe that's $50 to $60 a month, something in that range, depending on. I think the surcharge was for 256 gigs, $150 now. So the 10 with 256 gigs would be $1,149 plus another $200 for AppleCare. So you're talking, after tax, over $1,400.
Yeah, if you go to buy outright, that's going to turn a lot of normal users off. So I think pricing it where they priced it it'll get the diehards to turn out and still be unfazed and do it, which is what they want. But I think having those multiple tiers also gives it the, oh, I can just go get this one and they're not gouging me on this one, and I'll just go get the 8 or the 8 Plus and be happy with that. That's all I need. I really don't think it's going to hurt it at all.
I think it kind of goes both ways, where, you know, I can see Jason's point where Apple likes to tout their first weekend sales, and this will kind of cut into that, because there'll be people like us who are, you know, the people who order it 2:01 a.m., you know, and those people are going to have to wait 2 months now. But if Apple is having the problems that they're having building this phone in quantity as much as, you know, the rumors that we've heard, that they're, you know, they're just having production issues getting the yield on this phone to where they need it to be, you know, maybe maybe Apple's even thinking, hey, if we do it like this, then some people who've been waiting to upgrade, you know, they're going to see the 8 and they're going to say, hey, this is pretty nice. You know, I'll go ahead and do this because it's cheaper. I'm not spending the money. And it'll cut down on a little bit of the demand for the iPhone 10 come 2 months from now. You know, you'll still have the diehards like us who are, you know, are going to wait for that phone. But for other people, you know, they might put off this, you know, this new full screen one for a year or two, you know, because they don't want to, you know, do the Apple tax slash, you know, early adopter tax that's going to come with this new phone. I mean, there are going to be issues, right? I mean, it's just, that's the nature of the early adopter. I think it goes both ways. Number one, yeah, it's going to cut into opening weekend sales because there's going to be a lot of people like us waiting. But it also could end up helping Apple in the long run where they don't have a mad rush for, hey, if everybody can get the 10 now, then there would be more people on order than the 10. Some people have been chomping at the bit for a new phone, and they're going to be fine, just fine with an 8, kind of like Jason mentioned with his wife.
Yeah, same with mine, where it's just like, new phone will be fine. I don't need all the fancy stuff. Just give me something that takes better pictures, and I'll be happy. And that having to think outside of our own use case is, I think, what a lot of analysts have a hard time looking at. I think normal people won't care as much, but that's just me.
It's the One Percenter Wives Club.
That's a better title for the show.
Well, I've had every New Year model since the 3GS first came out. And, you know, my justification for it is pretty simple, right? Tell people, I upgrade my camera every year and it just happens to come with an iPhone attached.
And I think with how much time they always spend on the phone and the keynotes, I think most people would agree with you on that. That's a great use case for upgrading it, particularly since your pictures just get better and better every year by doing that. So if you have the means, it's always worth it, I think.
Yeah, like one of the things that I was happy about is that this year the 2X camera is getting optical image stabilization, right? So I was at a concert just last week, took some video on the 2X, and the video still turned out great because it had software stabilization in, but if it had had, you know, optic image stabilization in there combined with the software, the video would have turned out even better.
Yeah, that OIS is really a nifty feature. If you've never played with it, listeners, try recording a video of yourself walking around. If you have a Plus, it's pretty slick. It's great what it can do. So this is probably a good place to put a stake in the ground. Maybe we'll continue this a little bit later after we've had more time to absorb and process and form other opinions on it. What do you guys think? Good place to stop?
Were there any other specs you wanted to go over, or do you think we hit them all, or at least the key ones?
We hit as many key ones as I could document.
If we're judging it by the time it takes to download the GM on my phone and iPad, those are still running on the Sheraton Wi-Fi here, so they've been running quite a while. One of them says 3 minutes now, the other one says 6 minutes, so that's how long we've been doing the show.
Yeah, those progress bars, you can't trust them. Well, I suppose that'll do it for this episode then, if there's nothing else.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. So, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @InfinLoopback. That's @INFINLoopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim, that's @BigJim, and Brad is @MeesterIdle, that's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.